Welcome to the Painting Lines Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things tennis. Join Eric and Aiden in their discussion for updates on news and pop culture, and from hot takes to betting, they've got you covered.
Ready? Set.
Welcome back to Painting Lines. Last week we discussed the decline of championship caliber players, comparing it to that of an average player and kind of forecasting what it'll look like for some of the current guys. And then this week we're going to be talking about a guy that is a source of a lot of tour drama, a high level player that's been a set away from a Grand Slam victory but hasn't gotten it done, and that's Stefanos Tsitsipas. So just to kick things off, let's set the stage with the current situation of his career. In 2023, obviously he started out real hot. He made the Australian Open final, but since then he's had a lot of inconsistency and kind of makes people question, like, what can we expect from a guy like him? So, Eric, what are your thoughts on how Tsitsipas has been playing in 2023?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, you said it best yourself, just super inconsistent. I feel like he's playing like a sixth-ranked player, like he is. He's able to make good runs in tournaments, but you don't really expect a whole lot from him, right? Seems kind of be going through a rough patch right now. But yeah, I mean, excited for his future. I don't know if he can get back to where he was in the past.
Yeah. So let's kind of take a step back and look at Tsitsipas' career from some of the earlier stages. One of the interesting things I saw from his career when I was delving a little bit more into it in the research, he kind of showed a pretty consistent but rapid development after he turned pro. So in 2016, he turned pro and he was 18, but he was already actually ranked within the top 600. He started 2017, he was at 210. And then by 2018, he was within the top 100. By the time he turned 20, he was within the top 20 players.
Kind of sounds like that classic case of maybe prematurely getting thrust into the spotlight. I mean, right now, Alcaraz is kind of in there, but he seems to be handling it well, whereas Tsitsipas never really was able to win a slam that young.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he's more like a Runa, where right now you're seeing Runa struggle a little bit, whether it's with injuries or physical things or whether it's just a mental aspect. But getting thrust into the spotlight when you're 20, 21 can't be easy.
No, that's a good comparison too, Runa.
Yeah, but I know, Eric, he was one of your favorite guys on the tour around that point. So do you want to give any kind of background on why you liked him so much as a player?
Yeah, I mean, I could tell you why right now why he's not my favorite player too. It's so hard to root for someone that just can't close it out. You know, I loved him. Like you said, he was my favorite player. First off, I loved his one-handed backhand. Kind of reminded me of my other favorite tennis player, Roger Federer. You know, that elegant, classy one-handed backhand, just ripper. I even tried to do a one-handed backhand myself for a bit. I think when we were playing, I was doing a one-handed, right?
Yeah, at school.
Yeah, no, now I'm two hands. But he also had pretty sweet hair. He's kind of one of those players where it's a cool look. You know, there's not a lot of X factor and flair on the tour anymore. And he kind of reminded me of that 90s mullet Agassi. And now that I'm saying that, I'm JJ Wolf, he's got that spunk too, that long,
exactly,
crazy hair.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
this was way before JJ Wolf was on the scene. He was also up and coming. So I tend to gravitate towards players who aren't already established. I like to get in early, right? So I just don't look like a bandwagon fan. And he was really emerging as one of those top next gen players. And the last thing, you know, the fact that he was Greek was also pretty interesting. There really are no famous Greek tennis players. So thought that was pretty cool. And
yeah, I mean, I think for a long time the Greece like tennis scene was actually represented by an American, because Pete Sampras has like a Greek lineage. His mom is from Greece, but it's different because he's American, he's not from Greece, whereas Tsitsipas is actually from there and could represent like the country.
Yeah, no kidding. And also I was looking into it because I was wondering, okay, how have I not heard of a like an Athens Open or Greece Open? And they discontinued it, I think, in the late 90s. So I feel like that's one tournament that Tsitsipas could just win year after year.
Yeah, I mean, when he was a younger player, I mean, I was about to go into kind of his early career. They have still like a lot of ITF tournaments in Greece, but he played in so many of those in like 2016 and 2017, where I have to imagine that must have been really great for him. There must have been a lot of support for him at those tournaments.
Yeah, so those little tournaments, though, is it mostly local, like Greek tennis players, or do players come in from all over the world and play in those?
Well, I think it's kind of like what Alafi was talking about a couple weeks ago, because guys come from all over, but the smaller the tournament is, the less prize money there is and the less points are available. So if a guy sees, okay, there's like one tournament in this spot, okay, I'm not going to go to that one because I can't fly all the way there and then come back and then go to this other tournament. So I'm just going to skip that one. So guys that are more local maybe wouldn't have gotten in if a bigger player had showed up. They're able to play in it. But so, I mean, just kicking things off in his career, though. I mean, in 2016, like I was talking about, it seemed as though his strategy was play in the small tournaments, but dominate them. So he won 4 ITF titles. One actually was pretty cool. It was over Casper Ruud in the final. And then he made the final in another one and lost to Yannick Hanfmann, who obviously is a top player now. I think the biggest thing, though, was he made the final of 2 challengers in Morocco, like near the end of the year, which gave him a big chunk of points. The interesting thing to me, though, is that he made these 2 deep runs kind of at the end of the year, which is very different from what you see from him now. He tends to actually do a lot better earlier in the year. So it's kind of surprising that he was able to make these runs.
Do you think that has anything to do with the clay season? Because doesn't he do better on clay?
He definitely does do better on clay, and I think that is part of it. But I think he's done pretty well at like the Australian Open too in his career overall. So that's just another hard court tournament. I don't know whether it's just specifically there's something about Australia that favors him, but he tends to do pretty well there as well. So I don't know whether it's just fatigue as the year goes on, but maybe it's because he was a lot younger at this point.
Yeah, that could be. Also, I feel like his team, his player box is so stressful too. Like maybe this break that he gets before the start of the year is nice for him to decompress, unwind. And then towards the end of the year, he's just had like, you know, tournament after tournament where, I don't know, it doesn't seem very delightful. The relationship between like his dad and everyone there, it just kind of seems high stress. So maybe it kind of takes a toll on him where he's just like, all right, I'm done. Like, come on.
Yeah. And then by the time he gets back and he has like a month off, he's like, okay, I want to get back and playing. And so he's excited for the Australian Open.
Yeah, exactly. So then what happened after that?
So in 2017, I think off of the back of those 2 challenger runs, he started playing in bigger tournaments. He did things like qualifying for the French Open in Wimbledon, and he actually won a challenger in Italy. And for the second year in a row, he kind of had a great end of the year. I mean, he qualified and beat Khachanov in Shanghai, who was ranked number 40 at that point. And he made a great run through qualifying to the semis in Antwerp, and he beat number 10, Goffin. And then made the finals of another challenger and entered 2018 on a pretty high note. He was inside the top 100 after making some solid runs and definitely was kind of on people's radar of, okay, this guy's an up-and-comer. He's able to beat some top guys and he's pretty young. So I think he was definitely on people's radar at that point. But it wasn't really like a fluke or anything like that. He was on people's radar for a reason, because in 2018, he went from like that up-and-coming player to being like a known star. At this point, he was consistently winning like a couple of rounds in every single tournament. And then he made the round of 16 at Wimbledon, which to this point is like still his best result at Wimbledon. Like he made the round of 16 this year, but that's only equaling his best result. So it's kind of interesting that his best result early on at a Grand Slam was at Wimbledon, which he hasn't really been able to replicate.
So where would you say he was ranked around this time?
I don't remember the exact ranking at this point, but by the time he turned 21, he was, I think, in the top 20. So probably after Wimbledon, he probably was breaking in maybe, 30s when he entered Wimbledon. And then by the time he left Wimbledon, he was maybe in the top 20.
Right. So when you were saying that he was starting to pop on people's radars, was he the best player of his age group? When I was first starting to get into Tsitsipas, I kind of was going back and forth between him and Zverev. Like, okay, wait, which one am I going to pick? Because I knew one of them was going to kind of break out and be the star. And
you're like, they both got longer hair.
They both had long hair, exactly. Yeah. Which I thought was cool at the time.
Yeah. I mean, he also made a deep run that year at like Canada. He made the finals and he had 3 actually top 10 wins that year in Canada. He beat Team Zverev and Kevin Anderson. So that's a run that really shows like, okay, this guy can pretty much beat anybody on the tour. And then collected his first title of the year in Stockholm. And at the end of the year, he won the Next Gen Finals. So by the way, if anybody's wondering what the Next Gen Finals is and how that works, essentially it's like the ATP Finals, but there's an age restriction. So you go on the ATP Finals race and the top guys that are on there that are under 21 qualify for the Next Gen Finals. So when he won that tournament, he beat guys like Tiafoe, Rublev, Hurkacz, and actually Demonar in the finals. So top 20 guys in the world right now.
So could you be in the Next Gen Finals and the regular finals if you're under 21 and that good?
I don't think you actually could. I think if you qualify for the ATP Finals, you play in the ATP Finals. For example, like this year, I mean, Alcaraz is under 21, so he could play in the Next Gen Finals, but he's not going to. He's going to play in the regular ATP Finals.
Yeah.
But obviously, winning the Next Gen Finals, it's kind of a signal. Like, this guy, we think, essentially, the ATP Tour is like, we think this guy is the next up, right? 2019, he won a couple tournaments, Estoril and Marseille. Made the final in Beijing, Madrid, and Dubai. Made the semifinals of the Australian Open. And that was actually a really big one because he beat Federer in the round of 16, who was the back-to-back defending champion.
Yeah, I'm sure when that happened, everyone's thinking, okay, this guy is the real deal.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is not beating just a nobody Fed. Like, Federer was still a pretty solid player at this point. Tsitsipas made the semis in Rome, semis in Shanghai, and he actually got a win over Djokovic in Shanghai. So he was established as, at this point, okay, this guy is a legitimate player. He's a top 10 guy. And at the end of the year, he won the ATP Finals, actually, in 2019. So this guy should be winning Grand Slams at some point. Like, when are we going to see it? And you were obviously a fan of him at this point. You must have been pretty excited going into 2020 and based on how he'd been performing, right?
Yeah, exactly. I still wasn't sure at that point, like, okay, is a success reaching the quarterfinals, the semis. I wasn't totally expecting him to win the slam, I would say, but definitely like on the border of it.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the interesting things about Tsitsipas is I think throughout his entire career, he's been a player in Grand Slams where you see his name in the tournament and you expected a pretty solid run at most tournaments, at least a couple of wins. Maybe he loses to a guy that you'd be like, oh, that's not the best loss, but you expect him to do at least a relatively consistent result. And that's what you saw in a lot of tournaments. He made a lot of semis. He made a lot of quarterfinals. He made a lot of finals. And then 2020 through 2022, he kind of continued that trend. I mean, he just made a lot of consistent runs. 2021, the French Open, led by two sets against Djokovic in the final, and then had that collapse. I mean, that match is just a spectacular match if you're a Djokovic fan. But I remember watching it, and it really looked like Tsitsipas had the match in the bag. I mean, he had all the momentum, and then Djokovic was able to flip a switch and mentally lock in, and it seemed like what Djokovic said to himself was, just go for your shots, have confidence. And he started hitting shots, and Tsitsipas started being like, oh, I don't want to lose this lead. What am I going to do? And got a little bit tight. And all of a sudden, even though Djokovic was two sets down, he somehow stole the momentum.
Yeah. And I have a pretty interesting take here. So I think that Roland Garros 2021 finals is the turning point of when, okay, he's been to a final. Now you can expect him to start winning them. Because before that, he hasn't been to the final. So I think all those semis and quarter wins, to him, were a success, right? You're kind of building up your career, you're making deep runs, but then once you get to the final of a slam, everyone kind of expects you, okay, maybe you didn't win that one, but going forward, you should be at least, you know, making it to a final, hopefully getting some wins. So that's kind of when I expected, like, all right, now we're rolling. You know, his first slam, it's tough. It's against Djokovic. So that's fine. Get back, you know, get back to it. You'll get another one, win another one. But unfortunately, we have not seen that.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is he continued to make these deep runs. But like I said before, he still didn't feel like the favorite at any tournament. I mean, you had guys like Djokovic, Alcaraz too. He's been kind of passed up by guys. And while he continued to be a threat at these tournaments, you weren't really looking at any of these slams and being like, okay, I expect Tsitsipas to win this tournament.
So with that being said, would you say that his career then is technically could be classified as a success because he's not expected, like him making it to a final and not winning or a semifinal is like, all right, good job.
So do you think,
you know, we didn't expect you to win, but good job. My question is, does he go into tournaments think, obviously he goes into tournaments expecting to win a slam, but if he does not win a slam in a tournament, is it a failure? Like, you can kind of say that about Djokovic and Alcaraz because we have such high hopes on them. Like, they probably can say they go into every tournament expecting to win, where some players go into tournaments and saying like, hey, I made it to the quarterfinals, or, you know, let's
I see what you're saying. I think that all players go into tournaments being like, my goal is to win. I think as fan, everybody's goal is to win.
They're gonna say I'm gonna go as hard as they're gonna say.
Everybody's goal is to win. Okay, don't say that there's guys that go into a tournament and say my goal is to like lose in the second round.
Not
everybody's goal is to win.
My goal is to make it as far as I can.
Yeah, but their goal is to win in the end. Right. That's their goal.
Yes.
They may not realistically have a chance of accomplishing that, but their goal is to win. Uh-huh. So he goes into a tournament and his goal is, I want to win this tournament. Now, I think for fans watching it, I think if they saw Tsitsipas, let's say, make a semifinal of a Grand Slam, say he made the US Open semifinal and then lost to, let's say, Alcaraz. I think people would look at that tournament and be like, yeah, I think Tsitsipas had a good tournament. He made a deep run, but he lost to a guy that was probably better than him. However, I think if he actually made the final and then lost, it would be considered a failure because he's already made the final of other tournaments. And once he makes the final, he's so close that it turned the tournament into a failure because he was so close to it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's because I see what you're saying. It's kind of hard to lose in the final and then be like, all right, well, I had a good tournament. I didn't win, but hey, I got second place.
Yeah.
Especially if you're a competitor.
Exactly. It turns it from, I think once you make it to the final, the tournament turns from he had a deep run to, did he win the tournament?
Yeah, it's kind of like I'm in the final. And going off that, I feel like Tsitsipas is one of those players where when he's in a match, he is locked in. You know, he's not messing around. He's not laughing. He's not giggling. It doesn't really look like he's having fun. It looks like he is there on a mission. He is there to win, and that's it. And I think now he's trying to kind of like loosen up and play more freely, joke around a little bit, have more of a personality on the court. And I think that's what's hurting him. I think he plays better when he has that like fierce mentality.
I think if he's so locked in that it's like anything disrupts him. I mean, that's why I think Kyrgios was able to kind of get in his head, is because Kyrgios is just so loose on the court that it probably pissed Tsitsipas off. I mean, we know Tsitsipas is pretty tightly strung when he had that bee incident. I mean, oh my God, who's making that bee noise? Like, I don't think most people would have reacted the same way he did. Like, they may have made a comment about it, but like when he walked over and was like, who is making that noise? Like he was definitely pretty, pretty tightly strong.
Oh yeah. And how about when Kyrgios hit an underarm serve on him and Tsitsipas just ran up and tried to crush it and ended up almost hitting a fan.
Yeah, exactly.
Inches.
Yeah.
Inches
could have just been kicked out of the tournament. Like Djokovic was.
Yeah. Disqualified.
Yeah.
I just remember that press conference. He was so sad. Like, I'm not even going to say just upset or pissed, sad. Like, his tone of voice, he's like, yeah, Nick is just a big bully.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, damn, this feels, you kind of feel bad just watching this guy. He got so just mentally destroyed.
Oh, dude, I'm mentally abused.
Yeah. But speaking on what I was talking about earlier, I mean, he tends to do well in the first two slams of the year and then kind of drops off. I mean, if you look at his Australian Open performance, it's pretty impressive. Semi-final, third round, semi-final, semi-final, final over the last 5 years.
Damn, he plays well in Australia.
Yeah, I mean, and that's consistently playing very well. And then, I mean, if you look at the French, not quite as consistent, but fourth round, semi-final, final, fourth round, quarterfinal. So still very solid results in the French Open. But then you go to Wimbledon and it's like first round, didn't play. First round, third round, fourth round. not great results. And you're like, what happened? Is he just not that great on grass? Is that what it is? Like,
maybe you can chalk it up to a surface like Wimbledon. He doesn't play as well on grass, but the US Open is also hard court. And if he's doing so well in Australia and then, you know, not great in the US, I don't know if the courts play significantly different for being hard court, but other than that, it's probably just the end of the year.
Yeah. And I mean, I think they probably do play slightly different. I mean, hard courts can play differently, but I don't know if they play differently enough that you could see a semifinal in the Australian Open and then first round in the US Open and chalk it all up to the court being different.
Yeah. Well, maybe the US, that surface does play pretty fast, doesn't it? Because I know Medvedev likes it a lot. And he's that type of player who plays well on a fast surface. But yeah, Steph's game is just not really built for fast surfaces, I guess.
Yeah, it definitely seems that way. I mean, we could also consider whether it's a coaching thing. I mean, I remember Philippoussis becoming his coach. And then, I don't know, a month and a half later, he's removed his coach, goes back to his dad. What is this coaching carousel here? And just all ending up back with his dad again.
I don't think it's his choice. I think his dad is fully in charge of his career right now. And that coach, he didn't even give him enough time. Don't you think? That's way too short to actually see improvements and noticeable changes, right?
Yeah, but I think also, I think there's a level of Tsitsipas is probably struggling with patience because he's been so close that he just wants someone to come in and give him like that one switch that pushes him over the top. And so he didn't see that immediate switch and was like, nah, screw it. I'm going to go back to what I know.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of saw that with Runa too, you know, moving on from his coach fairly quick after not seeing the results he wanted.
Yeah, but I think that's a little bit different because that coach he had been with for like a year, I think, versus Philippoussis, yeah. It was just a couple months.
Yeah. He peaked so early, and I'm sure being 17, 18, 19, his dad had a huge say on everything he did. So I feel like Stefanos never really got to grow up and become independent because his dad is with him every single minute of the day. It seems like they're on tour most of the year. So he just kind of still lets his dad make these decisions for him.
Yeah.
And I know he has a brother too that he plays doubles with sometimes, Petros. I wonder what his role in the Stefanos Tsitsipas team is, if he's just like a hitting partner.
Well, no, Petros is also, I believe, a pro player. So, I mean, he's a very solid player.
Singles,
I think
he's on tour.
Yeah. He's just not as good as Stefanos.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, Aiden, this is the question everyone's been waiting for. Do you think Stefanos Tsitsipas wins a Grand Slam in his life?
I mean, he's 25. I think he actually will win a Grand Slam, but I think it's going to take a little bit of luck because I don't necessarily think he can make that super tough run through the tournament where he has to beat like three or four top 10 guys. But I do think he could pull off one big win if he goes into a match with the right mindset. Like if he has a relatively easy run through the tournament, makes it to the final, I think he could come into this match. If he has just the perfect mindset on that day, I think he could get it done. And I think he has the ability to put himself in that position to win the tournament.
I'm just imagining it right now. I would love to see on Match Point him win and just his reaction.
Yeah.
I'm sure he would just be so relieved, like just drop to the floor, probably start tearing up, to be honest, and just
revel in that. And I think that's the interesting thing is like when you're someone like Tsitsipas, the win is relief.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I did it. Okay. I have that under my belt now. Versus I think a lot of guys, like I think when Alcaraz won the US Open, it was like, oh my God, I can't believe I just did this.
Yeah.
There's almost like more shock and joy versus when you've been on the tour for longer, like Tsitsipas has, it's just like, whew, thank God I got that done.
And has been as close as he was too.
Exactly. Exactly.
Jeez, man. I agree. I think he gets one. It'll come later. I think in a couple of years when Djokovic is just completely off the tour, maybe Alcaraz, something happens to him. Medvedev gets a fluke loss where Stefanos can kind of just, like you said, by the alignment of the stars and some strange stroke of luck, he gets a win.
So you don't think he could beat any of them in a final?
No, no, I don't. Yeah.
So see, there's slightly where we disagree. I think if he made a run, he made the final, and he didn't necessarily have to play. Like, I don't think he could necessarily beat Medvedev and then beat Alcaraz.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if he played one of them in the final, I think he could get that one big win.
Yeah. All right. Well, what do you think his best attribute is?
I think that while he does have a pretty backhand, I think his forehand is really a strength of his. The forehand is such a massive part of being a good men's tennis player. And so I think he just has a very strong, solid forehand. And I think he's good at volleying and I think pretty solid at like finishing points. So that's what I would say are his strengths overall. What do you think?
Yeah, no, like you said, I think he has great hands. He plays excellent at the net. Not a big server, but he still is able to like pinpoint certain, like he has good accuracy.
I think his first serve is pretty strong, but obviously it's not like he's an Isner or a serve bot like an Opelka or someone like that.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, who do you think Stefanos Tsitsipas' biggest rival is?
I think in terms of animosity, it's got to be Medvedev. I mean, they had that classic beef, I think it was in Miami, where they came to the net and had a verbal confrontation. But you would think maybe Kyrgios, but Kyrgios really hasn't been on the tour as much recently. But I think if Kyrgios was out there, I think he would be probably his biggest rival, just because they're so, so different in terms of personality.
All right, well, what about someone like Alcaraz?
I think Alcaraz, he's what, 5-0 against Tsitsipas?
Yeah.
It's not really a rivalry because Tsitsipas hasn't won, but I think Tsitsipas could beat him in the future, but it's going to have to be Tsitsipas' day. It's not a situation where I think I would see Tsitsipas consistently beating Alcaraz.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I wouldn't call it a rivalry either because my reason, yeah, it's 5-0, but also the way Tsitsipas talks about Alcaraz too, it's kind of just like a, hey man, this guy's too good. Like I'm giving everything I have and I just can't beat him. You know, like it's always very cordial at the net in the press conference. He basically glorifies Alcaraz, where I feel like in a rivalry, it goes so much deeper. You're like, yeah, you know, it wasn't my best day. I know I could play better and get after it next time.
Yeah. I mean, I think that probably comes with just, yeah, like you said, feeling that there was nothing you could do. Mm-hmm. It definitely doesn't make it seem like there's a rivalry there.
Yeah. Yeah. But hopefully we'll see a lot more Stefanos Carlos matches in the future.
But I also think that once you maybe get a win, it gives you mm-hmm. a little bit more confidence and it can turn into a rivalry. Because right. Obviously, like yeah, once you started off, if you've lost 5 in a row against this guy, you're like, I just can't beat him. But then if you beat him once, you're like, okay, I know that I can do this. Maybe after those matches, you're going to start being like, okay, well, I didn't perform as well, because you're all of a sudden comparing it to that match you won.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And I think we're seeing that with Medvedev and Sinner right now with Alcaraz. They've both beat him fairly recently, and I think now that's just going to push him even more confident in the future against him.
100%. I mean, I could see Sinner winning a Grand Slam if he has the confidence to beat someone like Alcaraz.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And so Stefanos right now, he's ranked 6th, which is amazing. That's very good. Better than most players will ever get to in their career, but it's not his best. So are we seeing a decline in his career and it's only going to get worse, or is he just in a trough and he bounces back?
Well, I think like we mentioned, I mean, it's the end of the year right now. He hasn't been playing as well as he has in the past, but like it's the end of the year. This could just be a downturn like we've seen in years past, and he could start off next year. He could win the Australian Open next year. We don't know. So I think we'll have to wait and see. Tsitsipas has still been winning a few matches. He's been stringing a few wins together. He actually won a tournament in Los Cabos, I want to say.
Yeah, against Deminar.
Exactly. So he can still string a few together. And I think it's just going to be, we'll see what happens next year. But I don't think we can necessarily say he's in a decline yet.
Yeah, I think it's too early to say decline and trough. Like maybe a little blip, but definitely not a trough. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, where would you rank him against the next gen players? You know, the guys like Zverev, Medvedev.
I think if we're talking about Zverev and Medvedev, I think he's probably number 2. I mean, He's behind Medvedev for sure. I mean, Medvedev been number one in the world, has won a Grand Slam. I mean, hard not to put him at number one there, but Tsitsipas, I think, multiple Grand Slam finals and a lot of semifinals, number three in the world. I mean, I think Zverev has that little bit higher peak ranking, but I think Tsitsipas has probably had a better career, in my opinion, so far.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Well, do you have a favorite or like funniest Steph Tsitsipas moment?
I mean, I think it was pretty funny, that match against Kyrgios, a pretty funny one. Kyrgios, he just has that kind of wry smile where he's looking to the crowd like, oh, I'm getting to him right now. And Tsitsipas just being so pissed off. That's a pretty funny moment, in my opinion. What about you?
Wow. Well, for me, it's got to be that Miami Open in 2018 that you kind of referenced earlier, when he allegedly called Medvedev a bullshit Russian.
Yeah.
And Medvedev got so pissed. He's like, look at me, Stefanos. And he got into him. He's like, you're a kid. You don't know how to fight. If you're going to say it to my face. And Stefanos just kind of storms off the court. And I feel like that just set the stage for their rivalry.
They were like, hold me. He was like, hold me back. Hold me back.
Dude, I still laugh my ass off every time I see that video.
Dude, I feel like Medvedev would have just whooped him.
He's like, he's a kid. He doesn't know how to fight.
Exactly.
It's funny that the umpire's like, Daniel.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, stop. We don't want to see this.
Dude, it's so funny how helpless those guys are against the players.
Yeah.
The umpires.
Please. Just please.
I tried.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get into segments here.
Sounds good. What's new in tennis? What did you see this week?
Yeah, I saw an article on Tennis 365. Ben Shelton injects new life into American tennis, says veteran. I was wondering, who could that veteran be? And it turns out it's Tommy Paul, which is pretty funny. I guess he's a veteran. He's been on tour for a while, but I was thinking someone retired or at least in their 30s.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, the article just talks about how much excitement and energy Shelton brings to the tour. And now he actually broke into the top 20 with his fellow Americans like Fritz, Tiafoe, and the veteran himself, Tommy Paul. But kind of going off that in there, Tommy Paul says that he feels like he aged prematurely because he has like a new, young, fresh, energized 20-year-old coming into the scene. And he actually beat him in the US Open too. So thought it was pretty interesting, and I'm really excited for Ben Shelton's career.
Yeah. Another guy saying they feel like they age prematurely. Like, I think what you were talking about last week with Runa feeling like, oh, I feel like I shouldn't be dealing with like injuries at this point in my career. Like Tommy Paul saying he's aging prematurely. I wonder if that's a trend where young guys, obviously the techniques are really advanced to optimize performance for like really young guys. But I wonder if there's a level to which it almost breaks down your body more because of how intensely you're able to train yourself at such a young age.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very interesting. And I also wonder if it's like the earlier you start too, then, you know, the faster you age.
Yeah.
But it's kind of funny. I mean, it kind of reminds me of something like dog years. Like, you know how every one human year is 7 dog years? Like tennis players just age so much faster.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just such an intense thing to be training on. And for these guys, like, I'm sure Djokovic was obviously like training a ton when he was a kid, but I think there are guys coming up now that are like training every single day at 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just something that's just going to beat your body down.
Yeah, no, I know. So what did you see? What's out there in the tennis world?
Well, I saw this article about prize money for this year. And one thing that kind of stuck out to me was that Rude was actually number 10 on the list. And you might be thinking, oh, well, this guy made the French Open final. Like, how is he not higher on this list? And so he made $2.9 million this year. But almost half of this money, around like $1.3 million, was just from that one French Open final. And it's just crazy to me how that, not just in terms of ATP points, but also in terms of prize money, one result can be such a significant factor in where you stand in terms of your peers.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty interesting. I mean, it's kind of one of those things where you look at it. All right, well, he's made $2.9 million. Doesn't really matter how, as long as he gets it done.
Yeah.
But yeah, it kind of, it's funny with the points too. Like you've kind of mentioned before, like, is it unfair? Is it placed correctly? I don't know.
Yeah. All right. How about bet of the week? What'd you go for this week?
All right. I got a pretty interesting one. I have a parlay, a three-person parlay. Oh, Tommy Paul.
Three-person parlay.
Yes. I'll get into it. So Tommy Paul versus Fee, minus 205. Fritz versus Schwartzman at minus 750. And then Alcaraz versus Evans, minus 1,200. So I'm looking at this, and I didn't know exactly who I wanted. And obviously, these odds are pretty bad. So parlayed them together, and the odds are only minus 122, which I like. I'll take that. Kind of wanted a lock this week. I want to, you know, I feel like I'm on a pretty good hot streak. So wanted to keep it going and went with the three-player parlay to get better odds, get the minus 122. Yeah. There's really not much to say on why I picked each player. I feel like it's pretty obvious. They're just the easy favorite. So hopefully this is just the classic case of the better player wins. And obviously I need it three times. So we'll see.
Yeah.
So who are you taking this week?
I'm taking JJ Wolf plus 110 over Arnaldi.
Let's go. USA.
100%. 100%. They both had big wins in their last rounds, both made upsets, and they both have had a pretty tough run, to be honest. At this point, I think both of their first couple matches have been three setters, but I'm essentially just going with the American in what seems like a pretty much a toss up to me. So I think it should be an exciting match to watch, and go JJ Wolf.
Yeah, let's go JJ.
Alrighty. What about a match of the week?
My match of the week was Sinner beating Medvedev 7-6, 7-6 for the title in Beijing. I thought it was great to see Sinner get another title and beat Alcaraz. That was super enjoyable for me in the semis.
Yeah, second time this year he's beaten him.
Right. Yeah, let's keep it rolling. So obviously a super tight match, even though it was only two sets, 7-6, 7-6, and we got to see a lot of great baseline rallies, long points, and then like nice baseline winners too, because these guys are heavy hitters, and it's so satisfying seeing someone hit a winner from behind the baseline. It's pretty crazy. So saw that a decent amount here, and I thought Medvedev has had a lot of missed opportunities in this. I don't know if you saw, but there are a few where he just should have put it away, but he actually gave Sinner another chance, where Sinner was capitalizing on these and turning defense into offense. I think, you know, these points make all the difference in a tight match like this. And yeah. It was nice seeing Sinner raise the trophy.
Yeah. Seems like Medvedev, I think, plays a lot of matches that put him in a spot where they're critical points. Like, mm-hmm. I remember we were talking about that a lot in the U.S. Open, like when he played Alcaraz, and in the final, there were a lot of moments where the match is so close with Medvedev that if he wins some critical points, the match could easily swing his way. And it seems like here he just didn't necessarily get it done in those moments.
Yeah, I'd be pretty pissed if I was Medvedev, because I feel like he's that guy where after he'll just be laying in bed all night replaying points in his head, where he's like, shit, should have won that one, should have won that one.
Yeah.
But did you see that trophy?
I didn't.
It was massive. You would have thought it was a Grand Slam, like U.S. Open Cup. It essentially was the U.S. Open trophy, but bigger and gold.
Have you ever seen the Queen's Club trophy?
No.
That trophy is just like absolutely massive. And you're like, why is this trophy so big? But yeah.
All right. Well, what was your match of the week?
My match of the week was Fucsovics beating FAA 7-6, 4-6, 6-3. And so I wasn't watching that match actually initially. And then I saw it was really close in the first set, and I was just thinking, my first reaction was, okay, and you should really just bet all of your money on FAA to lose right now because of just the trend that he's been on. And it ended up being like super tight, but Fucsovics got it done. So FAA losing the first round for I don't know however many times in a row it's been, but just not the best trend for FAA.
Oh, man. Hopefully he gets it together.
Yeah.
But damn. I like Fucsovics. He is jacked, too.
Yeah. Got to rip that shirt off when you get the win,
yeah.
Too.
That's his classic celly.
Exactly.
All right. And that's the show. If you're not already subscribed, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube at Painting Lines Podcast. Feel free to shoot us a DM or email us any questions or thoughts at paintinglinespodcast@gmail.com.